You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So this week, the Mana Party and the Māori Party announced they have signed an agreement to work together up until this year's general election. On RNZ's Morning Report, you criticised the Mana Māori deal, saying it's not kaupapa Māori. Do you stand by these comments?
Absolutely. The Māori Party has shackled itself to the National Party for roughly the last 10 years, possibly longer. They have been a support party to the National Party in government for all the time that it has been in government. They've claimed to be an independent voice for Māori in Parliament. They are not, never have been. Mana is signing up to that. The Mana Party is becoming just another sub-branch of the National Party as a consequence.
What about initiatives that have been implemented under National, such as Pepe Pods, Breakfast in Schools and a New Zealand Wars Recognition Day, to name a few? Do you not believe these initiatives have had a positive impact for Māori?
I look at what's happening with unemployment, Māori unemployment in particular. Māori youth unemployment is the highest it's ever been. I look at what's happening in housing. It is an absolute utter disgrace what is happening in housing, especially for Māori. Māori home ownership is now down to 25%. It has fallen significantly since National has been in government. It has never been this bad before. When we had the homelessness inquiry last year, the Labour and the Greens, the Māori Party wished to come on board. Madame Fox got on her. She came on board. She promised that she would take the recommendations of the inquiry to the highest levels of the National government. We heard nothing since, and the housing situation and homelessness has got worse. Māori people deserve better, and it's not good enough just to have a party that claims to be an independent voice and there's nothing to show for it. I look at the seven Māori Labour MPs and some of the candidates we've got lined up to come in after this election. I see a very strong advocacy for Māori interests and for Māori needs, for Māori policy. That is way better than anything that the Māori Party, with or without Hornehara, Wera and Mana, can offer.
Yeah, because you said that Labour has more to offer Māori than the Māori Party does. Is this not reductive in the sense that it assumes all Māori have the same interests?
I've yet to meet Māori who don't think that there is a major problem with the low level of Māori home ownership or quality of housing, or are not concerned about the over-representation of Māori in things like homelessness and unemployment and the criminal justice statistics. All Māori are concerned about that. You've actually got to do something about it, not kind of just talk about it and claim that you're somehow a special independent voice but don't want to do anything.
And obviously there's been a bit of backlash from the Māori Party in relation to the comments. Do you think this is going to jeopardise your chances of working with the Māori Party to potentially form a government later in the year?
Well, I'm not expecting that will happen. The Māori Party has effectively become the Māori branch of the National Party. They are totally hitched their wagon to the National Party. I look to the wisdom and insight and intelligence and advocacy that Labour Māori MPs offer, and we've got everything that we need, that Māori needs, the Māori community needs, and those MPs, and they'll be a very strong, very important part of a future Labour government.
Moving on, it was announced a couple of days ago that the living wage will go up 40 cents to $20.20 per hour. Do you support this?
I support the living wage campaign, and I support the need to lift wages generally. It's not possible, given the current state of things, for that to happen overnight or in one fell swoop or by sort of central fiat. But the living wage campaign provides an absolutely vital benchmark. Mm-hmm. There's a growing number of employers who are saying the level of wages in New Zealand, particularly at the kind of low end, too low, ridiculously low, and there's a growing call for more to be done about that. But it's not something you can change overnight, as I say, the Living Wage campaign provides that important benchmark. It's about how far things are slipping for a large chunk of our workforce.
Yeah, do you think it maybe reflects a changing attitude towards the minimum wage as well?
There's no question the minimum wage is... the minimum wage was only ever intended, and in fact only really used to apply to new entrants to the workforce, younger workers, to make sure that they weren't exploited as they sort of got into work and started their working lives. Truth is now, it applies, and this is one of the country's shames, it applies to workers of all kind of ages, skill levels and so on, in various industries. And that is wrong. So you look at the aged care industry, where you've got a whole heap of workers who are at or close to, you know, only just a little bit above the minimum wage for doing responsible and important work. And so we have to, we've got to change that. The pay equity claim that is being considered at the moment as a result of the Christine Bartlett case hopefully will lead to some change, but we've got to do a lot better. The government can provide some leadership in that, but actually it's got to be across the board, industry, employers, business generally. We've got to do the work to lift wages, particularly at that sort of bottom end.
Yeah, last time, I mean, we just spoke a couple of weeks ago about the minimum wage increase, and I remember at the time you said you wouldn't legislate for a living wage at the moment, but there are a few building blocks that need to be put in place before you consider doing so. I mean, can you elaborate on what any of these building blocks would be?
It's about getting the union bargaining rights sorted out, you know, reinstating some of the important rules so that, you know, you don't have the situation where you have at the moment, where an employer just decides on a whim that they've decided they've negotiated enough, and they can walk away from bargaining. You can't have that. If you're gonna have bargaining right, you know, workers who join unions, that union membership is going to be meaningful, and collective bargaining is an important part of that. Then you can't have it that employers elect to walk away. So you've got to change some of those rules around it, and then you've got to work with, you know, unions and employers and say, right, what is the pathway to lifting wages, and particularly, you know, focusing on those industries that are dominated by low-paid workers. Now, it is in New Zealand's interests for us to be lifting wages, lifting incomes, and not seeing the level of exploitation that we're seeing at the moment.
The Auckland Chamber of Commerce CEO Michael Barnett has criticised the living wage, saying it makes businesses go under and was just a cost that gets passed on to the consumer. What do you make of this?
Yeah, pretty old-fashioned thinking, actually. You know, the difference between more money going into the pockets of those on lower incomes compared to, you know, the alternative, which is usually tax breaks that favour the wealthy, is that those on lower incomes typically spend their money. The money goes into circulation that benefits local businesses, particularly, you know, things like your hairdressers, your retailers, and others. So I don't accept that kind of argument. And there may be some impact on cost, but actually, if we're lifting wages generally, lifting wages for all workers over time, then that is going to happen. But actually, people are going to afford more, and that's what you want. That's the way an economy works.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.